take it on down from Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning, 251-343-0106. Need to be in touch with the show. That's what you do. You text me. Let me know what's on your mind. Joining us now here in the Faro Bureau, been a couple weeks, but State Representative Jennifer Fiddler is here with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm, as they say, surviving, but I'm not going to complain.
Just tired, huh?
Yeah, does it show? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't.
You're good.
Okay, good. Any hijinks over the spring break here? You know, no parties out at the beach or anything?
No. We've been... my personal time this past week's been, I did take some time off and did a little bit of, DIY projects at the house, painting, sanding, and that sort of thing. That's the kind of stuff I enjoy doing whenever I'm not, learning and, visiting and going to receptions and different chamber of commerces. And we had a lot of that last week though, too.
See, now that you're no longer fresh, you don't have to go to all that stuff.
Well, if you want to stay in the know, I think, you know, to kind of rub elbows with folks that tell you what's going on in the community. Yeah, you need to stay involved. And all so right. Arts and Crafts was this past weekend. I was there.
What did you, it was, I guess, abbreviated, but I don't know. We've been here living in Faro since 2021, and I had never been till this week to the Arts and Crafts Festival. It's just like it's an imposition because you got to go. Like, I need to go pick up my child at school, and I can't get to his school because they have downtown blocked off. So it's just like what am I supposed to gripe about? But never it's always been hard to get to. So we finally like broke down. Let's go see what this is all about.
Yeah, it's a big deal. It is a part of our culture here because it's been going on for so many years, decades. I was just thinking, is it
like this was the 68 or something?
Yeah, because I remember celebrating the 50th year. You know, we, as the public works director, it's a big part of our life. shutting down the streets and making sure everything was just so, you know, throughout town, and making sure all the flowers were, the tulips were scheduled to bloom, you know, whenever, you know, people were coming in town. And so, I still enjoy going and seeing the arts. It's two shows. It's a juried art show on one side, and then just the art center has vendors on the other side. So it's just a huge show. And, you know, it was sad to me to find out, you know, we were going to have to cancel. And that's a big decision, and they made the right decision, as we saw.
It rained all day yesterday, yeah.
Rained most of the day and lightning and just bad weather. So they made the right decision, but it, you know, with shutting down early on Friday afternoon, I know that was probably not, you know, an easy decision because the vendors come from so many miles away. I mean, this is
all over the country, right?
All over the country.
I was kind of shocked by that, like how far away, you know, this is, I guess, is it like an art circuit or something out there that travels around?
It's a juried art show. So you're going to have the best 5 or 6 or 10 glass artist and right. The best 10 photographers and the best 10 woodworkers, according to the judges. So, you know, they look at everyone's work. I mean, the artists submit their work, and so they end up trying to pick the best of the best or the most interesting and something different. I mean, it's so you do have new people coming in on the jury portion. You see a lot of folks, you know, getting in the year after year. You know, they're always the favorites, but that people buy a lot from. But yeah, it's a big part of culture. And usually I'm at Spring Fever Chase, too. I'm walking the Spring Fever Chase.
Hey, you know that you don't have to do that either now, right?
It's just something I enjoy. I've always done it. This year I didn't do it. I had some foot problems because I actually, for I guess walking 4 miles in heels like the Wednesday before, I had to give my foot a break. And so the Republican Executive Committee won my Saturday morning this past weekend.
I know how those events can go. Let's move on to matters of state importance. Got a binder full of bills here she brought in. Tell us what do you think's going on? I mean, this is kind of a weird, isolated, one-off week. What are we to expect?
Well, we got a big day tomorrow, and I did bring a big binder in because I wanted Jeff to see just how the inches of paperwork that, you know, if you're reading your bills that, you get to read through every day. We have, 20 maybe tomorrow, some great bills that I think one of them, if we get to it, I thought was pretty interesting. Representative Brock Colvin, he's another freshman, HB 60, creates crimes and offenses for the abuse and neglect of an adult with a disability and financial exploitation of an adult with a disability. And it just reminded me of our situation that we had here where we had a former resident, lives in a veteran's home in Georgia where his land was sold, and he wasn't aware that it was being sold. He had a fake deed registered on the Baldwin County website, and a neighbor actually bought the property, spent $200,000, and now the title company is on the hook for repaying the $200,000. So I'm not sure if this bill would affect that, but it reminded me of his situation. And I've talked to the Realtors Board of Realtors about that situation and how we could remedy it, and did a little research on and talked to the attorney who looked into that. And there's been the attorney I had talked to said that there had been three that he knew of in the last 6 months that had property changing hands, usually people living outside the state or what have you, owning the property outright with no deed or mortgage at the bank. And these folks were fraudulently submitting fake deeds, putting them on the websites or what have you, and selling property that was not owned by them. The FBI has been looking into it. You know, I did talk to the FBI a little bit during our fraud seminars, and it is it's a real thing. It's happening. So we do need to be cautious of that. And, you know, now we're in this world of transferring titles and everybody signing the DocuSigns over the internet and not showing up for closings and that sort of thing. And it's happening. I mean, we just need to be aware of it.
It's just amazing. A piece of property can be stolen like that.
Well, and now the process he has to go through to remedy it. We have to have another deed put on the recorded, or he has to record another deed to make sure that people know that was a fraudulent deed. And then he's at this expense. He has to hire an attorney, the rightful property owner. He's living in the veteran's home in Georgia. So it's just a big deal. Strong, but what we can do about it. And like I said, I did reach out to the Board of Realtors, and there's something that's being done in some of these counties, but it's really, it's just a way to kind of check back, and it really puts the burden back on the people that are buying the property, to make sure it's a correct deed. But, you know, our title companies, they've been on the hook for it.
Well, the title company seems like they should be able or better equipped to spot this kind of fraud. Like, it shouldn't have been that easy. I don't know who you would necessarily put it on, but I mean, like a legislative fix. What can you change the process? What can you do?
Well, that's what I'd ask the Board of Real, Jeremy Walker. I asked him, what can we do? Is there anything we can do? And, they know it's an issue. It's not been a huge issue, but they know it's going on. It's in the beginnings of, possibly becoming a huge issue. So what can be done? They're still looking into the process, if we could change something in the process, you know, on the title company side, you know, what we could do. I don't know.
Joined by State Representative Jennifer Fidler here on the program. The other big one, and you were a no vote on the first gambling bill, but now the Senate has their own bill. Any thoughts? Are you hearing anything about your colleagues and that Senate bill on gambling? Any discussion? Because the House has been pretty, I mean, there obviously has been this week off and they rushed to get that done. But now that you've been back in the district, have you gotten any feedback?
I've gotten a lot of thank yous for voting no on the original bill. I don't think there's been a lot of widespread education on exactly what's changed. And there's quite a bit that's changed. And you read it, you know, these no votes may be a lot more comfortable with, you know, the changes. They're definitely, I mean, they're huge changes and they're, you know, there's lottery only.
You hear this all the time. Like, people just want the right to vote on lottery. And sure, the polling would back that up, but you have to approach them with the question. But I'm not, and I don't see it. Maybe you do. Like, people, the way it's being portrayed is that the public is knocking down the doors of lawmakers demanding that they get the opportunity to vote on a lottery. I don't ever see that. Sure, would we like to vote on it? Whatever. Yeah, but is it like at the top of the list of things you want the state of Alabama to get done in this legislative session? And I think it's probably further down the list.
Yeah, people are worried about, well, here we know they're worried about our infrastructure and how fast we're growing and if we can sustain it. And they're worried about, you know, putting food on the table because the cost of inflation has skyrocketed, and they're worried about making sure these grocery prices at 35-40% higher than they were. I mean, those are the things I hear, not if we can vote on lottery or not, but we're not going to do anything without a vote. We cannot by the Constitution. So we're going, if we do anything, you're going to vote on it. The people will vote on it. It's just, we got to get something for the people that the legislators feel comfortable with, to put in front of the people. So that, I mean, when I voted no on the constitutional amendment, to me, it was voting no on that legislation that just wasn't something I think we should have been putting in front of the people to vote on.
No, and that's the bill of goods is being sold here. It's not just a lottery. It's everything else. And we're not really being educated like we should that you're going to vote on. Now, there's some people that want to vote on casino gambling and sports betting and everything else. But, like, ask yourself, like, number one, how's this going to make the state better? Sure, bring in a bunch of money. But, like, Representative, every single year, the general fund and the ETF have been increasing. I mean, we're not really seeing tangible results. I mean, like, what is the expectation that a lottery is going to do? Even the lottery that's popular, and I understand it, but what's it going to do for the state's education system to make it even better than it is now? I mean, it's not great, but I just throwing more money at something is not right. Not necessarily the answer all the time.
The more money we give government, the more money they will spend. And that is coming from someone who's been in government for 25 plus years. I've seen it. I managed it. And, you know, our former mayor here in Fairhope, that's the same words that would come out of his mouth. And they couldn't be any truer. The more money you give government, the more money we'll figure out how to spend it. And it will be spent. And we will need more money next year.
But it's not just spending more money. What are you getting out of it, too? And it's not clear to me that, like if we would spend more money and suddenly Alabama had the best schools in the country or something, then that would be different. But we increase the education budget every year, and it's gotten slightly better. But the weird COVID situation and all of that is probably a part of the variable that can't be accounted for in this calculus. But like, what are we going to get out of throwing more money at the state government through gambling?
Well, you know, the way the legislation is written now, it's going to be a third and a third and a third. A third's going to go to the general fund. A third's going to go to the education trust fund. A third's going to go to roads and bridges, or, you know, to the Department of Transportation. And the way that kind of the thoughts on that is, we're doing a pretty good job looking after the money now, the committees are. So just give us the opportunity to continue managing those funds, and it's not earmarked. The revenue overruns, of course, we're seeing now in these last couple of years is mostly due to the injunction of all the federal funds coming in, and the American Rescue Plan money's being punctured right. in. And then, you know, the comment you're making about we do have to be fiscally frugal, you know, and grow government no more than the growth of, you know, this whole economy's growing.
Well, it's just that how much more do we want to grow government in this state? That's what forget about the societal impacts of gambling and all the evils. How much more do you, and then you can be for it, but you are going to grow government out of this.
It's going to be grown, you're right, because you're going to be forming a gaming commission. You're going to be having someone kind of look over that. There's going to be someone hired, and it's much less than what it was before. But you still have an arm of government that's doing the enforcement. So do we need, I don't know, you know, that is growing government. You're right.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not asking you to put you on the spot about that, but that's something like another one of these things that are getting lost in the conversation about gambling and expansion of it in this state. Let's get a break in here. We got State Representative for Fiddler. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I fly a starship across the universe divide, and when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show. What up and talk? 106.5. Thanks for sticking around on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Still with us for just a few more minutes, State Representative Jennifer Fiddler, lawmaker from Baldwin County, is here. What else are we looking at? I mean, it's been a bumpy first half. The House and the Senate, both, you know, y'all gotten a lot of things done, I think more than I had anticipated at this stage in this session. It's not that you still got the budgets out there looming, but it's not going to be. You're taking away some of these hot buttons, Representative, and once the BIR is out of the way, the budgets are passed, maybe it won't be quite the free-for-all heading into sine die.
I appreciate that, because there's none of that being used for leverage or getting back, you know, to the budget portions of not, you know, being held up in, you know, long legislative days trying to hammer out these huge issues. But we've had some big issues, you know, that we've got through. That school choice was interesting, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it helps. Here's the moral of the story. It helps have the governor on your side, it turns out, whipping votes for you, it appears.
I think you're accurate on that. Yes. I enjoyed reading that bill, and we've had some of my colleagues were not for it just because, you know, worried about what it's going to do with our education system and the money that I was a bit worried about having so much money go out, $7,000 per student. It was a concern. But I think we're going to have to kind of make sure our public school systems have more money per student. And I don't think that's, I think it's something we really need to seriously look at, because our education system, we're pulling all our children up, and some children just they require more resources, you know, special ed or children with disabilities or non-English speaking. I've said it on the show before.
Which is a growing thing in this state.
30% of Summerdale School, non-English speaking. 26% of Silver Hill School, non-English speaking. What does that do to our other students that are trying to learn in those classrooms and trying to pull those 30% of your students up?
I mean, like a bilingual math teacher. It's got to be challenging, right?
Yeah, and they've got one Spanish English speaking teacher per 100 students. That's not good.
No, well, to be continued, I suppose. Or is it a thanks for making the time for us this morning?
Absolutely. Good morning, everybody out there. Enjoyed being with you.
All right, we'll do it again in a couple of weeks. So State Representative Jennifer Fidler there. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. I keep on rolling.